Well, let's see if we've got something recorded here. This is Bill Schneider, and I'm here with Leonard King on July 6, 1981. And, Leonard was one of the original members of the Alaska Constitutional Convention. The first question I'd like to ask is a little bit about your background. And some of the factors that may have led to your being chosen as a member of the convention. What are some of the factors that you think led to your choice?
Interest, I suppose, in community affairs, being mayor of Haines, and interest in community affairs, and my interest in the in attaining statehood because of absentee landlords and absentee direction from Washington.
Had you been outspoken on the issue of statehood before the convention?
That's true, yes.
Perhaps that was an influence too.
Oh yes, because we have been facing this thing right along with our fisheries, with our timber, with all our different resources. We had no say in it at all, and there was so much red tape, and we had no authority over any of these things, and we had to make some type of a change or kind of thing.
Were you involved in one of those industries? Timber or fishing?
Well, of course, all my life, yes. Logging, mining, and fishing.
All three. In the actual convention itself, what were some of the directions that you wanted to see the new state go in? What were some of the directions that you were eager to see pursued when you gathered together in that convention?
Well, of course, the main thing of the whole thing was self-government, but the end of that was divided many factors, and one of the things stressed, which that I'm very disappointed was that there was so much emphasis put on the type of borough government, that this was to simplify government. We had a man lobbying there who paid his own expenses and lobbied throughout the whole convention and afterwards during the statehood struggle, with all this information that the borough type of government was going to simplify and cheapen the cost of government. And to me, it has just went the opposite way. It expanded government. Smaller communities who, with not much more population, have just intensified and expanded their number of officials and number of governing bodies, and I think that was not the intent at all.
What was the intent?
The intent was to simplify the government. For instance, let's take Seattle, Washington, and King County, which two forms of government, which would be a simplification of making the King County and Seattle one form of government, where it would save millions and millions and millions of dollars. It was to simplify government instead of expanding government and cut the cost down and give you more direct results. Here you have all kinds of different officials and taxing bodies, and this was a great disappointment to me because that was not the theme of the convention. That was not the theme at all. The theme was to simplify government, not expand it.
What were some of the measures that people were talking about at that time to simplify government?
Well, of course, one of the themes that didn't get very far was, of course, the unicameral legislature. And that was brought up from the Indian delegate from Nome, and of course that didn't get much consideration. But it was discussed at great length, and of course we had thought that we had done something to... Of course, our job, of course, was to create a framework, and we wasn't doing legislation, making legislation. We were performing a framework of government, and the legislature was to implement this. And so that we put in just the framework, and we had experts, from the foremost experts in the country, and we spent the midnight oil with all this information. We had our own library, our own librarian. We spent lots of hours working with all these different people and thought that we had compiled a good document, strictly a framework of government to be implemented by the legislature, to simplify a direct form of government with the best interests, of course, of the people.
What parts of that framework were particularly important to you? What parts did you play a part in?
Well, of course, my part would naturally be in resources. And I was a member of the resources, and I was a member of a direct legislation, initiative, and referendum. But my important role on the Committee of Committees, you were asked, of course, as you know, what you prefer. And people on the Committee of Committees who knew me knew that I would probably fit in resources. And I was a proponent, of course, more than anyone else, of wildlife, fish and game. And my background as a guide, and my background over the years, I was a proponent of fish and game, and we had a lot of appeals from representatives of these people there, protect the fish and game in this country. But also, of course, I've been mining and all these different things, and I fit in there quite well. I've been logging on my own, I have been fishing on my own boat, and so I wasn't really naive when they were talking to me about these various things.
That must have been very helpful.
Yes. And these people who put me on this committee knew that I had this background, because some of them had known me for many years, who were on the Committee of Committees, and knew that I had this background.
On that Resources Committee, were there any particular provisions that you made at that point, looking to the future, in terms of balancing wildlife and natural resource development?
Well, the thing that discouraged me is that they'd done so much so little for wildlife and so much for mining and other things, and I thought it was not balanced. And I wired, and I done everything I could, and I thought they were devoting too much time just spelling out the provisions of the mining development of the country, which I was not opposed to, but I thought that we should spell out more about our game and our wildlife and our fisheries, which they've had to do right along since.
Do you feel then that that has come to haunt us now? Or is that too strong a statement?
Well, I don't think it's probably come to haunt us, because what's come to haunt us is our land problem. Come to haunt us is what the United States government has done to us in our land claims. because our hands are tied to what we can do in our wildlife and our mining and our timber and everything else, because it has never been settled, and I don't think we can make great progress until it is settled.
At the time of the convention, what were your thoughts about land problems? Did you envision at that time that there would be the problems that there are today?
No, no, not this, because we didn't think it would be split up like it is now. No, I don't remember a discussion ever taking place that we ever thought. I don't know where it would come from. If we did, I don't know, because I don't know where the foundation would come from. To me, it was a thunderbolt when this land thing did come and these decisions were made. I mean, the Indian claims and the different things that came about in this land claims. I didn't envision that at all. I mean, to that extent.
Did you envision any native land claims?
Yes, I suppose everybody did, but to this extent, I mean, that it is now.
If you had known, if you had had the wisdom of today, then do you think that there would have been different provisions made in the state of constitution?
Well, I don't know, because that's putting it into a different format there, because the thinking and the technology and everything has changed so much in this 25 years that I don't think I could answer that question, because industry's changed, everything's changed so much. I don't think I could answer that question fairly. So that's bringing that 25 years up to date, and I don't think a person could do that with all the changes that have been made. I don't think they could tell you anything. I mean, your Congress has changed, your people's thinking has changed, my thinking probably has changed. And bringing that up from 25 years to date, knowing what you know now, that would put a different light on the whole thing. I don't think it could.
Thinking back to the 1950s, a critical issue then was the relationship with the federal government. And today it is too. What sort of provisions were designed at that time to, what was thought of in terms of an adequate or sufficient relationship with the federal government? What were the members looking for in the way of an interface between the new state and the federal government?
Well, we wanted to be divorced and run our own show. We've been under this serfdom ever since we bought it from Russia, and they had been our judicial system, our governors, our prosecuting attorneys, our fisheries, our timber, our everything was run by the federal government, and we were trying to divorce ourselves from it, at least have the rights of the other states. Mm-hmm. We haven't even divorced ourselves yet from the fiefdom or the serfdom of the other states. We don't even have the same rights as the other states now. And we were trying to get to full rights of statehood and run our own show. We haven't attained it yet.
Why?
Well, talk to that representative back there in Ohio. A lot of it is that people didn't understand it, and they still don't understand the things that we have and the problems we have in Alaska. I mean, they're talking about it in Juneau every day on newspapers and Fairbanks and all over, that they think we're rich people up here, and still people up in the Arctic there are living in terrible conditions and underprivileged and poor housing and everything else, and we're all rich. You can look out the Capitol building in Juneau and see all kinds of shacks all over there. And still, they get an impression back there that we're all rich people up here. We can have a heck of a time. I just listened to a radio deal last night where one of the lady columnists said that people up here are rich. We're going to have a heck of a time living that down.
And you think that that has been a problem, a continuing problem?
Yes, because like Stevens and Murkowski and all of them said, they'd be liable to come in there and then grab some of what we already have because we have too much. Because they don't understand the problem back there. Very few of them come up here and study the thing anyway.
What efforts were made at the time of statehood to create an understanding of Alaskans?
Tennessee plan, for one thing. Tennessee plan.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Tennessee plan was sent people back there to Washington to lobby for statehood and tell them the whole story. Before, spent months and months. In fact, I helped, I was back there and helped Tennessee elect Egan move into his quarters where he was going to live during this time that he was lobbying. And they were back there just working like everything, lobbying for statehood and telling the story of Alaska. That had been used before, the Tennessee plan, and that's the only thing they could think of that they could use effectively to make those people understand what they were trying to do.
Was it effective?
Oh, I think so, because they didn't. And of course, we had Bob Bartlett there, who worked, night and day and for the cause. And Bartlett was very effective. He was liked man. He was a liked man. The people respected him back there. Although he had no vote, they respected him.
What of his efforts were particularly helpful in shaping the relationship of the new state to the federal government?
I don't know. I imagine that his lobbying, because I was with him, with the Secretary of the Interior and with a lot of other people, where he was lobbying all the time. Secretary of Interior from Oregon, McKay, whatever it is, McKay, I think his name was. I was with him, and there's nothing but lobbying all the way through. That's all he was doing with all the officials that he could contact and work with. And he was a very effective lobbyist for the simple reason that the people liked him. And he was a personal friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, turning our direction a little bit from the time of statehood, how has it turned out? How has it panned out?
Well, I don't know if there's any cure for it. I think the main thing is that people have to take more interest in their government. If we're going to come out of this thing, I mean, the special session now, next Monday, spending over your head, spending money that we don't even have, comes back to city government here in Haines and other places, you've got to have people that's going to have to take more interest in their government. Because it's pretty hard to read all those people down there what they're trying to do. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but I don't know. There's an awful lot of money on the table there. Well, we're talking about not the millions anymore, we're talking about billions. And that's a very tempting thing, you know, to lay on the table with all that money. So I don't know, outside of getting people interested in their government, I know that applies here, and I'm trying to stir up something here, is that you've got to have people from the grassroots to be interested in their government in order to put the best people available into that legislature down there. There's nothing else you can do. It's get the best people there is in the market to run our government. Because, man, boy, that money is really going out.
Do you think the state has made progress since 1959?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. But, gee, I think a lot of the money is spent reckless on maintenance.
In what areas have we made progress?
Education, for one. I mean, we have lots more school even here. I mean, right here where I live, education here, we get more school buildings, we get a new swimming pool, and a track there for the athletes that come from all southeastern here and run on the track, and but we don't have the rain, you know, and so forth. And, oh, yeah, and the help to the cities who didn't have any money. When I was mayor here, we didn't have a dime. We couldn't even put in the waterworks. I mean, you help the cities to put in waterworks, paved streets. As long as that money is used efficiently, sure, sure, we'll make progress.
Did you envision some of those things happening back at the time of the convention?
But we didn't have the money, and we didn't know about the oil.
Did you envision that?
The oil? No, because we were talking about number four up there, Naval Reserve number four, and talking about things, but we didn't know that a big oil boom was coming. We were talking about peanuts. This is all new stuff. What surprised me more than anything else was the first $900 million. Where it disappeared in such a hurry. And nobody seemed to know until it was all gone. The public didn't know where this $900 million went until it just evaporated. It was gone. I still don't know. I never did see a report on that thing. I mean, it just, everybody was talking about all this money. We got $900 million, and we don't have a vestige of that. I don't even know where it went to. We just disappeared. Everybody wants to bring home the bacon when they're down there and to their community, you know. What I don't know is one thing, and maybe you can tell me. This matter of reapportionment. Now, reapportionment, of course, reapportionment to reapportionment. It's going to come through now and it'll be a little change. But does that solve the whole problem when most of the representatives still come from the Anchorage area? But when we're talking about human beings, how does that help the people in the Arctic and all through the Northwest who still have these problems? Now, where's the human part of reapportionment? When you can still dictated to, or whatever the word is, from Anchorage. I've got nothing against Anchorage. But how can you buy people who have the most people in the legislature, and these people up there who have poor housing, I've been up there, poor housing and inadequate housing, and the ones they built was no good, didn't serve the cause, they've got to have them down. These people in Anchorage have nice houses, but they can vote for these funds and get these funds, and how about the people in Arctic? They're still human. Now, there must be a human equation someplace in reapportionment besides the vote. One man, one vote.
What were the opinions of the convention? Goers on that question of apportionment?
Well, I don't know now because...
Did you deal with that question?
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes. Oh, my. We had meetings. Southeastern had meetings by themselves, and because we know we're playing third fiddle. We had our own meetings and discussed it at length because we were down the totem pole, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, of course. And exhausted.
Did you feel that the equation that was worked out was workable?
Well, I mean, that's all there was. It's all there was that we could do. I mean, and it's probably all we can do now, but what I'm getting at is the human part of the thing, the humane.
Population of science.
Population. Yes, maybe that's still less. The governor has it on his desk now, and the law. I suppose that's what they're doing in other states. I mean, we had all the studies there. But to me, that still don't solve the problem. That people can live... Now, these people lived in the Arctic all before we ever came here, before there have been people anchored ever thought of. They've been there for hundreds of years. But they live under these conditions, and people in Anchorage live in, I say, luxury. But still, they get the money, and those people up there got to fight like the dickens to get a decent house. But I don't, probably legally, what do you do nothing about it? That's the law. I don't know what the solution is, because I think all the states do the same thing. This was patterned after other. All the constitutions, all the states are right there, and we had all these experts, and we went through them all.
Could you have anticipated that as a problem?
Probably, but what was the answer? I mean, where were there a better solution? Was there a better solution? Nobody's found it.
What do you think the governor's going to do?
On the reapportionment? Well, I don't know what it takes. I don't understand what we've got to do with Cordova. I don't understand that part of it. What brings us way up into that country up there? I don't understand that part at all, because there's no... You know, this formula they use, you know, about economy and all this. I mean, what's the relationship between Southeastern and Cordova? I don't understand that part of it. Or yak at that, I can see, but when you start going way up in there for reports in our district, cut it up into blocks and so forth, you see. But you're going to what, lose one Fairbanks or something? And. Anchorage or Wasilla, they'll get a couple over there.
At the time of the statehood, did you make any formal statements? Is there any particular themes that people remember you by at that time?
Probably by my Alaska name, which is Shupak. Maybe they can remember me as Shupak. That's my Alaska name. Oh, I don't know. Of course, I was kind of rabid on wildlife, and I don't know whether I was. There were some members of, probably in meetings that you've been to, that there were certain members, in the legislature, like that camera. I mean, we had an awful lot of people that like to expose themselves to that camera and take up an awful lot of time, and, you know, it's kind of disgusting, and it just took up an awful lot of time. But it was well organized. We had good people, and we had a good library. And Tom Stewart, who's the judge down there now, was the secretary, and he worked night and day. In fact, he had a heart condition over it. He just worked terrible. And it was everybody worked hard, and the lobbying part, we saw no pressure. Now, the big mining companies were right there, you know, but there was no pressure. Nobody ever came to me, or I don't know if anybody ever came to anybody. There was no pressure like you'd pick in Congress or oil companies. It was oil companies, yeah. No pressure. They wanted to know what it said and what it meant. What do you mean? You know, what do you mean? What this means, but no pressure. Change it. No. What does it mean? What does it mean? But no pressure. I mean, it was a well-run deal. But everybody cried when it was over. Everybody was wiping their eyes when they were quite close, you know, and like, I don't want
to. We sometimes say that we can benefit from the wisdom of the past. As you look back over the years since 1959, what lessons have we learned as a state, and in particular with reference to our relationship with the government?
Well, that's the hot question now. Well, I think you probably learned quite a few, is that you certainly can't rely on what they tell you. That's one thing, and they changed their mind, and our past experience over all these years, you know, has made us very suspicious of them, because we've had very poor luck in our dealings with the federal government and the bureaucracy. So what the answer is to it now is how are you going to deal with them in the future? Seems with the new Secretary of the Interior that we're getting a little bit of leeway here. Maybe we'll be able to. I'm conservation minded, but I'm not conservation for locking everything up, you know, so that we can't use it for the best use and the best good of all. I don't want to see everything, you know, just like Ubi done and the rest of the people, but I mean, if we have minerals and stuff and wisely supervise that, we don't can't open some of these things up and use them for the good of all the people. Of course, there's some very moot questions coming up, and I heard one the other night on the television about big aluminum companies now interested in your power sources. But are we going to open this low power to these big companies now at this low cost, or are we going to flood? Or what's the answer to that? So we've got a lot of problems ahead of you. Lots of them. Still lots of problems ahead.
Do you think Alaska's in a unique position in terms of its problems with federal government, big money interests, corporations?
Oh, I think so, yeah, because if we don't cool down in Juneau, if we don't cool down, we're giving a bad impression to our federal government and to the people outside. You know, if we don't cool down now, and kind of make some semblance of order and wisely use this money, I still think we're going to be in trouble. Yes. Yeah. We have plenty of fellas back there yet, like they fox out of us, you know. Some of them were insulted up here, you know, in these hearings.
Could those questions have been anticipated as early as 59?
Well, the richness of the oil wealth, the markets, and the not knowing that, you know, that we were going to have this big oil boom. And I mean, these things come up overnight. Like the timber now was a great big thing here. All at once, the market is. I mean, how do you anticipate these things? I mean, now the market is practically dead in timber, and that was a tremendous big thing, you know, in the southeastern especially.
But am I not correct that the Forest Service had always been a major influence in southeast Alaska?
Right.
And that certainly must have been on the minds of the members of that convention when they gathered, as well as some of the other federal agencies. And certainly there must have been some thoughts as to how to work out a relationship.
Oh, yes, because timber, big interests had been interested in this country many, many years ago and had measured streams and worked in this country 50, 60 years before statehood or more, you know, had knew about the potential of paper and pulp. But, I mean, going into something special like that, of course, the Forest Service, we knew about the Forest Service and, you know, about what they thought. But the thing was, with transportation and with all the different government regulations and cost of travel, you were discouraging people from coming to Alaska because you couldn't compete in any of these things anyway. You couldn't encourage anybody to come up here to start any type of business like that. But in the cars, you can compete with outside. Because now diminishing force in the states is a different problem now, because then they could come up and you have different modes of transportation to haul your product out. Not those days. It's pretty hard to bring those times, you know, up to now, where things have change and so are so rapidly changing, you know.
Do we need another convention? Do we need another look at our relationship with the federal government?
Well, what I'm afraid of there is that it'll open up a keg of worms, and boy, you're going to get all kinds of... I would be violently opposed to another convention. Even this deal here, setting a limit on spending that the governor's calling now, I'll bet you if that goes over, I'll bet you they will find a way legally to get around that.
Do you think that the existing structure is adequate? Do you think?
I think so. I think legally, I think it's adequate, and I think they could implement it with laws. But if they open that thing up and you're going with all this pressure on there now, I think it'd be dynamite. Look at California. Nobody can read their Constitution. They've amended that Constitution so much that I don't think there's a lawyer in the United States can read it. How many amendments? Hundreds. Hundreds. Missouri had it right there at Dover. Hundreds in California. Hundreds. Millions. I'd be very careful. I'm not the authority on this by any means, but I'm just expressing what I think, and I think they've been very cautious.
What do you think the nature of implementing of the Statehood Act in the future will be? How will the structure that was created, how will it change and adjust in the future? What can we look for in the next 10 years? in terms of we as a state and the directions we go and how we interact with all those other states down there and the federal government. What do you suppose is going to happen?
The wisdom of our legislator, the best men we can find to put in there to direct, and the best man we can get in our governor's office, the best people that we have in Alaska, that's what's going to direct the thing. And it's very difficult to do when you have a man in office now to get him out of there, because he has the resources. Now they're giving him a big staff on this new legislature, five people or whatever it is. The main thing is get the best people you can and the best governor that you can get to create an image. Create an image that will protect your Alaska and give a good picture to the United States and protect what we have. We better protect what we have. We don't have a good image now. But it's going to be with the people. It's got to be with the people. Who is going to direct this thing? It's the people we put in there. And the best. The best.
Natural resources are an area that you're near and dear to you. What efforts should the state pursue in the way of protecting, enhancing its natural resources?
Well, of course, forestry is continual. We have forestry here on the land over. See, this is the first selection here under statehood. You see, the state practically owns this whole thing here. This is one of the first selections. We have forestry here and state timber and stuff here. And it's in forestry, say, it's like anything else. It's vigilance and it's reforestation. Renewable resource. Plant trees are done here. Plant trees. We have a lot of rotten timber here. Plant spruce. For years to come, we'll have a spruce forest instead of a rotten hemlock forest. Renewable resource. Fisheries. We work on the fishery. They're doing a good job on it. They're hatcheries. Oh, I think they're doing a good job. Mining, the only thing about mining, they don't come up to what Canada does, because Canada has always subsidized legitimate miners. If you have a legitimate claim that's examined by a mining engineer and it shows potential, they'll build you a road. I mean, they help you.
Do you think that the state of Alaska ought to be involved in that type of...
If they have that type of a setup. But we can't do anything now, because where are you going to go? Land claims have got everyone tied up. I mean, if it's ever settled, but now this isn't ever Tom, Dick, and Harry that goes out and puts a stake in the ground. Now, Canada don't do it that way. This is a legitimate claim which shows promise. It's essayed and shows promise of a producing mine. They don't throw their money away over there. Then they will help you. We, in the past, we've had all kinds of deals in the state of Alaska where they give a guy a few hundred bucks and he goes under, we had it even here, he goes under a bridge and eats up the crop. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about legitimate. And over there, they've had great luck with it.
What sort of advice would you give to the legislature now, if you could give them one piece of advice?
Listening on tape?
Yeah, would you rather I shut it off now?
Yeah, I think so, because...
Try a different question here and see if we can come at this. Throughout the tape, we've been talking about the relationship of the state to the federal government, and we've looked at the problems that have been of the federal government coming in and at the present situation with the federal government having so many interests in different types of land, having so many interests in terms of control, and that apparently was one of the issues back at the time of statehood too, that independence, seeking some sort of independence and being able to do it our own way. Throughout the tape, we've seen that really hasn't happened. I mean, we really haven't gained any independence. In fact, perhaps there are even more controls now, or of different nature. Is that something that we'll always have to live with? Or is that something that you think that legislatively or some way the state could gain greater control over use and preservation of its resources?
Oh, I think the best thing that's happened to us, like I mentioned before, is this new Secretary of the Interior. And he's getting bombed now from different groups, but, and with the President's idea of giving the states more, you know, control and more rights, I think this is the best opportunity we've ever had. In our delegation in Washington, our two senators that are now members of the House seem to have the respect back there and are doing. Stevens is quite a, you know, is quite a high-ranking member in the Senate, and the governor is well respected. And I think we have the best opportunity we've had since this came up right now on our land deal. Through that secretary more than anything else, and with the help of our...
Another theme that we've been talking about tonight has been the question of the recent legislatures, the present legislature, acting in ways that are hard for us to understand. They seem rather irresponsible. Do you think if the state gains greater control, that it will act in a way that for you appears to be responsible and in the best interests of the future generations?
You're talking about the legislature now?
Yeah.
Their actions. Well, the thing is, that's getting right back to the quality of the people we put in office. And of course, this land deal is a very ticklish thing, you know. I mean, it just comes up at every legislature, and we've got to get this, you know, land to the people. But it still rests on the quality of the people we're putting in office. And the big drive is to get the best people we can. I don't know how you're going to do it either. It takes so much money now. Put the people in there. Because who is going to do it besides people? It's the people down there that make the laws. And if you don't get the best people there is down there, regardless of money, how are you going to pass these laws? And how are you going to, you know, and your commissioners and your directors and your people who, you know, who implement these things? And that's the whole thing.
So in your thinking, the structure is sufficient. It's the quality of the people that are in power that's going to make the difference in terms of the future.
I would think so, because you can implement by law. I mean, you can implement by law. Once this land deal is cleared up, you can implement by law, and that's what I'm afraid of, if you get the right implementation by law. And it's the quality of your people you put in there who is going to implement this thing. That's what I want, is the people who implement this thing. Lots of good people up here. Let's put them in there.
Any final thoughts?
Well, I don't know whether I added much to your... It's been a long time since I was down there, and I've never studied any of the notes or anything, you know, to before this interview. And like Fisher and those fellows who keep contact. And I'll tell you another one. Have you talked to Catherine Nordell?
Not yet, no. But I'm sure that one of us will.
Yeah, very well versed. She was my English teacher in Fairbanks.
I'll be darned.
Very well versed. Yeah, and I... No, I don't think I have anything. I've never kept too close. Only watched the legislature and what's happening here. And, of course, with everything, radio and television and papers, and keep posted all the time. But me knowing the solution, no.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. I don't know that I've done much help to you, but I...
Oh, I think that there's some interesting things that have been said, and when they're weighed and valued against
other things. Somebody else said.
Thank you very much.